and welcome into this Tuesday, believe it or not, edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Yes, I know. I told you that I wouldn't be here on Tuesdays, but things change. How you doing? You doing okay? I hope things are good with you and yours. You and your loved ones are having a great day, whenever and wherever you may be listening. Thank you so much for being there. It is the 28th day of April, 2020. And as usual, I have more to talk about than I'll have time to talk about, but we'll do what we can. So be sure to get today's show notes. You'll want the links to the stories. You'll want the depth of information you can get from the links to the stories, which you won't find just in the body of the show. And if you hear an odd noise in the background while I'm speaking, it's because that's computer fans, which I actually, up until the moment I opened the microphone, I was working on quieting those computer fans in the new computer that's like 6-7 feet away from me. And it's as far as I'm concerned, it sounds like a 747 on a taxiway. It's so stinking loud. But there's not a heck of a lot I can do about it at the moment. Maybe during the break I can get over there and do something about it. But that's a few minutes from now. It is, just as an aside, as long as we're on that, personal news, the Hackintosh conversion has been a success. It's noisy right now because I'm looking for a solution for fans and temperature control. Because PCs are built differently than Macs are. Macs have a lot of sensors on everything, and they have a special language that they speak back and forth between the hardware and the operating system, which tells the operating system, this is getting too hot, turn this fan on. And which is why when you, like, right in front of me, I've got this big 27-inch iMac, I've got this 15-inch MacBook Pro sitting over here, I've got a Mac Mini sitting just by my right elbow over here handling duties. I've got this little IBM, this little Lenovo ThinkCenter sitting over here running. And it's not having fan issues, it's just chugging along. But that computer sitting over there has got a big Ryzen 3900X processor in it, which gets very hot, and the fans are just running. All of the fans. I mean, all of, well, not the GPU fans. I just realized that it's not running. Except when it boots up, it goes vroom, and then settles down. But anyway, that's what I'm working on. That'll be one of my projects for later in the day today. But success. I've got it up and running. I've got my editing software running on it. Everything seems to be good as far as it working. It's just loud. And like I said, during the break, we'll see if maybe, just maybe, maybe if I do this, turn this around this way. I can't tell if I'm hearing it through the microphone or or if it's just so loud the headphones aren't blanking it out. Anyway, it's loud and I'm not happy about it, but we'll do what we can. What else is there? Today I'm going to be, not too long after we finish up here, once I get all of the odds and ends wrapped up, as far as getting the show posted online and show notes uploaded and the like, my friend Mike will be coming over, bringing his log splitter, and we will be splitting up all of that wood that we cut up that was on the driveway a couple of weeks back. It's been sitting out there, and I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised. This tells you about my faith in humanity nowadays, doesn't it? I'm a little bit surprised that somebody hasn't swung by in the dark of night and loaded their pickup truck with it, because it's just a bunch of stuff. It's a bunch of oak waiting to be cut up and made into firewood. And in the past, when I have had to take trees out of the property, I have had people stop by and ask, hey, what you going to do with that wood? But not now. Maybe that's because the homes that were affected, that I suspect might have come by in the dark of night to grab my wood, they actually had their own trees dropped. Maybe that was the, maybe that's why. You think maybe that's why? I think that may be why. Oh my. Anyway, it is that's on the docket for later on in this morning about 10 o'clock. I'll be starting on that. And then what else is there? Back in the studio later. Well, we'll get through with that, and I'm also doing some tech stuff with Mike, working with him and his new phone, getting it all set up. And then back in here, seeing if I can slay the fan dragon, because honestly, it's just ridiculous. I seriously, my intent was to have that quieted before. And you know what? I may listen back to this and go, you know what? Nobody can hear it. What are you talking about? So if you can't hear it, good, 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 good. But I can hear it. And as long as my ears are hearing it, it's driving me nuts, just nuts. So that'll be on the docket for later in the day. That's something that'll get taken care of one way or another. If I just have to shut it down and not leave it running, which I'm not used to with Max, I can just leave them running and they go to sleep and then they wake back up again. This thing, one of the issues about doing a Hackintosh, and please forgive me, I'm going to go into nerd world for just a couple of minutes here. One of the things about doing a Hackintosh is that it is real nitpicky. There's a lot of little bitty things that have to be done. It's kind of like running... I'm going to make some people mad. It's kind of like running Linux, because in Linux, you have to go into detail and you have all of these things you have to set up. You have to be absolutely sure every T is crossed, every I is dotted, every little thing is exactly right, or Linux will bite you. It'll disappoint you. And I know him, my friend Steven, he's an engineer. He's going to send me a note and say, you know, we run Linux on all our computers here. Yes, I do. It's a solid operating system. It was a wise choice. And in fact, I actually have a version of Linux that if this doesn't pan out, I'm going to put on this computer to run my editing software. So I'm using it as a backup. If this becomes too much of a headache, I'm going to go to Linux. Anyway, it's a nitpicky, detailed, aggravating transition. Very, very much unlike the one with a little tiny 93 that I have set up over here on the other side. It's running just fine. But then it's not handling the load. It's doing, what is it doing? Oh, yeah, it's running the automation software. And that's what it's doing. All of the brakes, those of you listening live, the brakes, all of the bumper music, everything that's coming out of the tiny 93 is coming out of a Hackintosh. And it does one thing. That's all it does. So I don't have to put it under any load. And it's just every now and then the fans run just to let me know, I need a breather. But that's about it. Okay, that's about it. Anyway, so much for Nerd World. That's an issue that I'll deal with later on. But on the whole, I'm very, very happy. I've done some tests on the system. I pulled up DaVinci Resolve and tossed some heavy-duty footage at it, and it didn't even break a sweat. So this thing is running. This computer, which cost me about $1,300, give or take a little bit, to get all up and running as it is right now, is running better than an iMac Pro. It's doing a job faster. It's handling things better than an iMac Pro. And that makes Mr. Mark pretty happy. Okay? All right. Now, let's see. Do we have time? Yes, I just do have time for this. Last night, Tucker Carlson on Fox News addressed something I've been wanting to address for days. These two California doctors who held a press conference and said, you know, we don't have to be on lockdown. Tucker Carlson talks about that.
Here's a physician and researcher from California called Dr. Dan Erickson. Erickson and a partner just delivered a 50-minute briefing on the latest numbers from California. The video they made has been viewed millions of times in a few days online. The bottom line is, after looking carefully at the data, these two researchers have concluded that California should end its shelter-in-place order. Watch.
We've seen 1,227 deaths in the state of California with a possible incidence or prevalence of 4.7 million. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work?
These are serious people who've done this for a living for decades. They have in their hands the largest currently available data sets on this question. And the question they're asking after analyzing all of those numbers, are the lockdowns worth it? So what is the answer to that? What's so striking is that so many politicians, the ones enforcing the lockdowns, don't seem at all interested in asking it. Instead, they're bullying forward as if nothing has changed. Just today, the San Francisco Bay Area announced it'll be extending its lockdown until the end of May. That's 5 weeks from now. What is the scientific justification for doing that? They didn't tell us because there is none. None. You may remember what they first told us back in February and March. They said, we have to take radical steps in order to, quote, flatten the curve. Well, 6 weeks later, we're happy to say that curve has been flattened, but it's likely not because of the lockdowns. The virus just isn't nearly as deadly as we thought it was. All of us, including on this show, everybody thought it was. But it turned out not to be. Hospitals never collapsed. Outside of a tiny number of places, they never came close to collapsing, at least not from an influx of infected patients. Instead, something remarkable happened, something amazing, really without parallel in American history. The opposite happened. Thanks to the lockdowns, hospitals have begun to collapse. Why? From a lack of patients. Politicians who couldn't pass ninth grade biology decided that practicing physicians should not be allowed to calculate the risk of transmitting the virus. They're just not qualified, unlike us. So these politicians banned so-called non-essential procedures, many of which are in fact essential. The results of this policy? In many hospitals, entire floors have been mothballed. Doctors and nurses are being furloughed in the middle of a pandemic. This is insanity. It weakens our healthcare system. Its effects will last for many years. That's all from the lockdown. So how long will we have to live with these lockdowns? Earlier this month, Dr. Anthony Fauci, whom we are apparently required by law to respect no matter what he says, suggested that in fact we may never be allowed to resume normal life.
If back to normal means acting like there never was a coronavirus problem, I don't think that's going to happen until we do have a situation where you can completely protect the population. If you want to get to pre-coronavirus, you know, that might not ever happen in the sense of the fact that the threat is there.
Now, we should tell you that is the same Dr. Fauci, and keep this to yourself because, as noted, it's not allowed to show any skepticism whatsoever. But that's the same Dr. Fauci who also announced that shaking hands, the ancient custom of shaking hands, should be done away with forever. And then a week later told Snapchat that actually it's fine to have sex with strangers you meet on Tinder. That was his epidemiological advice. Other experts on television warned that full-blown lockdowns may be necessary until a vaccine or effective treatments are found. What they didn't mention is that scientists have never produced a single approved vaccine or antiviral drug for any coronavirus.
Whoa.
So that could be a while. And that thought seemed to please frequent television guest Zeke Emanuel.
Realistically, COVID-19 will be here for the next 18 months or more. We will not be able to return to normalcy until we find a vaccine or effective medications. Is all that economic pain worth trying to stop COVID-19? The truth is, we have no choice.
The truth is we have no choice. Well, here's a handy guide for you in case you watch a lot of television. When a political operative like Zeke Emanuel, someone with a long history of lying, begins a sentence with the phrase, "The truth is," you should probably be on guard. When he ends that sentence with, "We have no choice," you should be terrified. And in fact, that's wrong. We have always had a choice. Other countries made different choices from ours, in fact. They're not waiting for a vaccine to open their societies. Why would they do that? There's no precedent for doing that as a scientific matter. For example, we spent millions of dollars and more than a decade trying to find a vaccine for the SARS virus. Scientists never developed one. That's a shame. But did we halt life in the United States in response? We didn't. In fact, you may not even remember that any of that happened. The striking thing is the science has not changed that much since then. Unfortunately, American politics have changed a lot. And that's the difference.
And that is the bottom line. American politics have changed a lot. This is something I said previously, last week, maybe the week before. And that is that politics on the state level and the national level has swung to the left. It has become very progressive. And as a result of politics being more progressive than it has been in our past, our politicians are offering state solutions based on theory rather than on fact. Because that's how progressives operate. And as a result, our society right now is in lockdown. Our economy is tumbling. And we are suffering more than we would have suffered had we not followed their advice. And that's the trouble with letting politicians run the show. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's the Tuesday edition. Diving into another week here. Well, yesterday we dove in. Today we're hitting the water, I'm telling you. Back to what was just before the break, Tucker Carlson and what I had to say about politicians running the show. Some people may not like that, but the bottom line is this. Politicians are not experts on anything but politics. They fall back on the advice of other experts in order to give them a foundation to stand on. And we have learned over the years that very often, more often than not, politicians are dead wrong about what they say we should do. If you just look back at, I guess one example would be the Great Depression and FDR's solution to the Great Depression, the New Deal, which prolonged the Great Depression. Every credible source says that the New Deal made the Depression last longer, the Great Depression, longer than it needed to. What many are not taught in school is that there was actually a depression before the Great Depression, and the government kept its hands off the economy, kept its hands off of everything, and we recovered very quickly. But when a progressive got involved and decided that their intellect was the answer to the problem and proposed all manner of things to solve the problem, it slowed progress down. So we didn't recover as quickly as we could have. In fact, today, we still, in some ways, suffer from FDR's New Deal. Do a little bit of research, and please, please, please look somewhere besides the mainstream sources. And I don't mean the crazy conspiracy theory sources, because, and trust me, some conspiracy theories aren't crazy. Some of them, woohoo, they really are. Be wise, and watch your sources carefully, and look for sources that are being honest, apolitical, and you'll see that those sources not pushing a progressive agenda will tell you things were different than you have been taught. Much different than progressive politicians will tell you. And that brings us back to square one. Politicians are really only good at politics. And politics is the business of basically lying to everyone to make a few people happy. So, putting politicians in charge of things is never really a good idea. The free market, the private sector, because of the nature of how it has to survive, responds much more quickly and with much more wisdom and reality. Because the private sector depends on its wits for its existence. And if it can't, it dies. This is something we've seen again and again, because every time progressive politicians try to get their fingers into the way the world works, they make things worse than they were before. And then they brag about what a great success they're bringing us. How about that? Another example is how the progressives have been reacting to President Trump's verbal thinking out loud, essentially, about UV light and other things in a press conference last week. When President Donald Trump asked scientists during that press briefing last week whether there could be a way to inject light, heat, or disinfectant into the human body to kill the coronavirus, he drew fire from the liberal press and other critics, including members of Congress, who have lied, bald-faced lied about what he said for political purposes. What he said was, suppose we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or very powerful light. Supposing you brought that light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or some other way. The president asked William Bryan, a science and technology advisor at the Department of Homeland Security, to explore these possibilities. Bryan presented emerging results from recent federal government studies showing that sunlight, heat, and humidity could help kill the coronavirus on external surfaces. In referring to ultraviolet light, Trump pointed to a proven medical treatment. So says Thomas Fagan, he's the founder of the Global Pandemic Consortium. UV light has been used in medical circles for decades. As I've already mentioned, it's been used in medical circles for decades to treat cancer, autoimmune diseases, graft versus host disease, and an array of other illnesses. The process used by medical professionals is called ultraviolet blood radiation, or UBI. Using a technique called extracorporeal photopheresis, or ECP, doctors remove blood from a patient, run it through a machine that exposes the blood to UV light, and then returns it to the body. According to Johns Hopkins Medicine, this effectively kills deadly lymphoma cells. The prestigious Mayo Clinic also employs this procedure to treat their cancer patients. Essentially, the treated blood goes back into the body and fights off the cancer cells. Fagan tells Newsmax, it's a very safe and effective treatment. Fagan, a medical entrepreneur, became involved in the case in the use of UBI in 2006 when he led a team conducting research in its effectiveness against hepatitis C and HIV. He said, we also did additional research establishing the ability of UBI to inactivate the SARS virus and found dramatic and unprecedented results. And he adds that the Food and Drug Administration requested additional research on UBI as a possible therapy for the H5N1 bird flu pandemic. The results of that research were compelling. The experimental UBI treatment showed that overall, the treatment produced substantial improvement in both clinical disease and pulmonary function, he says. He goes on to say, it also helped the infected animals to breathe and reduced inflammation in the lungs. But the most significant result was that the UBI treatment seemed to work no matter what variant of the virus was present by stimulating the immune response. Despite such promising results, as the bird flu threat waned, so did government interest in pursuing research in ultraviolet treatment. Fagan retired, but he came back to form the Global Pandemic Consortium in order to help in the worldwide battle against the coronavirus. The mission of the GPC, he says, is to fast-track research and establish an emergency response plan that will make UBI therapy readily available to fight this and future viral crises. He says, we are currently conducting clinical trials in primitive facilities across the country with our own funding. Once in place, the GPC Pandemic Response Program will be an effective way to ensure that during future pandemics, treatment may be administered in the comfort of a patient's home in about 20 minutes, drastically reducing the need for ventilators, hospital beds, and other treatments. So, thank you, President Donald Trump, for asking about the use of UV light for the treatment of COVID-19. Your request to research may not only result in a safe and effective treatment for COVID-19, but also for future pandemics. So as you can see, this is not just science fiction or fantasy. This is something that is real and has been tested with success in the past. And because government is a fickle beast, and chases after the latest shiny object, when a crisis goes past, they stop funding research, which is necessary for the future. They'd redirect money to their latest pet cause, and that is sad. But the president wasn't just spitballing, so to speak. He was actually talking about something real. And so when your progressive friends on social media tell you that's a lot of baloney, or they start talking about, well, he said to inject stuff you clean the house with. He said to Nancy Pelosi said to inhale Lysol. It's all a lie. It's all a lie. He had been briefed on some potential treatments and was just publicly spitballing about those treatments in front of the press. I will say he made a grave error in doing so, because the press is not interested in reality. The press is not interested in the truth. The progressive press is interested in ammunition. And if they have to lie about what he said, if they have to pull it out of context, if they have to change it fundamentally from what it actually was into something useful, they will do it. And this is what has happened. The progressive press and the progressive politicians have taken what was said by the president and made it into something it was not. Something to remember as we move forward. And another example of why the progressive press and progressive politicians just cannot be trusted. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. About halfway through this Tuesday edition of the podcast. A little further to go. I'm looking at my list and there's no way I'm going to make it through everything. I'm going to try to get through as much as I can, though, because there's some stuff that we need to talk about. Seriously, stuff we need to talk about. Let me get back over here. Well, with the president's announcement last week about being able to lift coronavirus quarantines and lockdown orders and the like, states are beginning to respond. And Texas Governor Greg Abbott detailed plans yesterday to reopen the state of Texas for business amid the coronavirus pandemic, allowing places like retail stores, restaurants, movie theaters to open up to customers at a limited capacity by the 1st of May, Friday, May 1st. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said wearing masks will be encouraged but will not be required. The move by Abbott puts Texas, the country's second largest economy behind California, at the forefront of the movement to reopen state economies that have been basically brought to a standstill as the U.S. grapples with the outbreak of COVID-19. Abbott said during a news conference yesterday in Austin, Texas, we're not going to pan up and hope for the best. We're going to open it in a way. We're not just going to open up and hope for the best. We're going to open it in a way that will also contain the virus and keep us safe. He added, a more strategic approach is required so that we don't open only to close down again. Along with retail stores, restaurants, and movie theaters, Abbott said the museums and libraries can also reopen on Friday at a 25% capacity. Sole proprietors of businesses can also open, and doctors and dentists can resume normal operations as well. Abbott added that hospitals will have to still keep 50% of their capacity for patients suffering from COVID-19. Churches and places of worship, which were allowed to remain open during the state's stay-at-home orders, are also allowed to expand their capacity, provided safe social distancing measures are still enacted. Barbershops, hair salons, bars, those all still have to remain closed, though. Sorry, ladies. You're going to have to get your nails done at home. And you're going to have to actually go buy that hair coloring off the shelf and do it yourself. Yes, you can. The governor's plan, which is has the backing of both the state and federal health officials, is part of a larger strategy in Texas to gradually reopen businesses. Governor Abbott noted that by May 18th, if there are no new spikes of contagion in Texas, that he will move on to phase two of the plan, which allows most businesses to open and operate at 50% capacity. He said, we'll open in a way that employs safe standards. And he notes that places like China and Singapore have seen a second wave of infections after reopening too early. He says there's a reason why all businesses in Texas can't reopen all at once. You know, already Georgia's opening up. Other states are. The fearmongers are having a hissy fit about it. They are not happy at all. They want us to remain shut down, I tell you. Shut down and locked up, I tell you. Because for some reason, we just can't otherwise get over what's happening. Now, I want to ask you a question. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Let's just say, let's apply the same standard elsewhere. There is, hang on, I'm looking for my stats here, okay? Because I have a page. I thought I had a page open with stats that has everything. Let's see. Is this it? Pardon me while I do show prep on the fly. This is honestly, this is something I thought about earlier this morning and thought, yeah, I need to approach it from this angle. And then quickly forgot about it. Because this is, you know, this is the way I work. I thought about, I'll do that. And then when it comes to actually time to do it. Okay, let's see. Doggone it, where is it? All right. So far this year, this particular thing has resulted in 437,528 fatalities, deaths. 437,528 people have died because of this. That's a lot. Now, that's 437,529. So far, that is roughly twice, a bit more than twice the number of coronavirus deaths. 427,000 plus. 437,530, to be precise. So, given that fact, that figure, that statistic, no one should be allowed to participate in the activity which is directly linked to those deaths until there are no fatal accidents for 14 consecutive days. This is if we apply the coronavirus model to this. Only then can we slowly begin to phase in certain classes of people who can begin to participate in this activity again. But at only half the rate, half of the participation rate as before. What is the activity? Driving. If we apply the same standard that we've applied to the coronavirus to driving, then no one should be allowed to drive again until there are no fatal accidents for 14 consecutive days. Then we can slowly begin to phase in certain classes of people who can begin driving again, but only at half the posted speed limit. There have been twice as many deaths because of traffic accidents this year than of the coronavirus in the same time period. And yet we are freaked out about coronavirus. Oh, I realize that you can't die of a traffic accident in an elevator. And I realize the comparisons will come flowing. But the thing is, as I said, at the beginning of all of this, there are comparisons we have to keep in mind. And we have to keep a firm grip on reality. A firm grip. 2.46 million children under the age of 5 have passed away this year. There have been 13 million, almost 13.8 million abortions so far this year. And by the way, that number is ticking up, one abortion per second. It's like a clock. 47.8 million people have been infected by HIV. ...544,877 people have died from HIV AIDS so far this year. And might I tell you that HIV AIDS is something that you can avoid catching? Oh, Mark, you're being heartless. No, I'm being factual. HIV AIDS is a behavior-related issue. But it's improper to actually tell the truth about that today, and has been for quite some time. And people will say that you are heartless, that you are cruel, that you are inhuman for telling the truth about that. I compared corona with malaria not long ago. There have still been more malaria deaths this year. So perspective is everything. It is everything. And we have to keep in mind that when we're dealing with government, we're dealing with people who really aren't experts. They're just good at talking. And when these people start telling us what we have to do, especially when they tell us what we have to do and it grinds against our rights protected by the Constitution, then we should sit up and say, hey, 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 give me liberty over safety. Attorney General William Barr yesterday ordered federal prosecutors across the U.S. to identify coronavirus-related restrictions from state and local governments that could be violating the constitutional rights and civil liberties of individual Americans. That's a good piece of news, because as I said yesterday, this has bred, this whole thing, the pandemic has bred a lot of little tyrants, or revealed, I should say. They were already little tyrants. Now we just see them for who they are. This memo to the U.S. attorneys directs the head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division and the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan to coordinate the department's efforts to monitor state and local policies and take action if needed. If a state or local ordinance crosses the line from an appropriate exercise of authority to stop the spread of COVID-19 into an overbearing infringement of constitutional and statutory protections, the Department of Justice may have an obligation to address that overreach in federal court. Barr's memo comes about 2 weeks after the Justice Department filed a statement of interest in a civil case in Mississippi, siding with a Christian church where local officials had tried to stop Holy Week services broadcast to congregants sitting in their cars in the parking lot. You remember that story? Yeah, Easter services. They were there in their cars in the parking lot. Their cars were even separated by 6 feet. Sitting in their cars in the parking lot, listening on their radios to their pastor. And the government came down on them. The directive also comes as many stay-at-home orders are set to expire and governors eager to rescue their economies are moving to ease restrictions meant to control the spread of the coronavirus, even as new hotspots emerge and experts warn that moving too fast could prove disastrous. Which, by the way, experts, they're being shown to be wrong again and again and again. Actually, what has been revealed to be correct in the entirety of this entire exercise has been the gut of people who said, this is not as bad as they're making it out to be. I hope you were one of those people, because it shows that you're in tune and you have a pretty good idea about how things really work and how manipulation occurs in politics and in the news media. So if you had that gut feeling from the beginning, good for you. And we're back. It's the Daily Perspective, the Tuesday edition. It's the 28th of April in the year 2020. Mm-mm-mm. I have a real quick story here that I want to get to because I've got another one I want to, I really want to wrap up with, but this one I want to, I really want to deal with because it's about, yeah, Nancy Pelosi. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat from California, wants the release of federal prisoners during the coronavirus outbreak, and she's using the Bible to make her case. Joy Reid over at MSNBC asked Pelosi on Sunday whether releasing prisoners would be part of the future COVID-19 relief legislation. You know, they're pitching another one. In response, Pelosi cited a well-known biblical parable. She said, "In our caucus, we are very devoted to the Gospel of Matthew." She says, "When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was homeless, you sheltered me. When I was in prison, you visited me." And so this is part of our value system. The parable, it's found in Matthew 25, tells about the separation of sheep and goats at the end of time. Traditionally, the parable is interpreted to mean that the people who Jesus refers to as sheep are true Christians who receive eternal life, and those who refers to as goats are people who will receive eternal punishment. The parable is often invoked by those advocating social justice to demonstrate the significance that Jesus placed on carrying out justice for vulnerable and marginalized people. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was homeless, you sheltered me. When I was in prison, you visited me. Okay. Let's remember. I'm not going to go long, but I am going to tell you about this. Just remember that. Pelosi said the House Judiciary Committee is developing legislative language that will secure the release of some federal prisoners who really don't need to be there. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in the release of hundreds of thousands of prisoners around the world already, including thousands here in the U.S. And that's because they're all cooped up together, and that close environment breeds more cases. And that was the concern. And we're finding in the Middle East that there are people who are foreign workers there doing things in Arab countries and that are building buildings and the like. They come from other places and they put them up in dormitories where they live really, really close together. And the coronavirus is spreading like crazy in those environments. Same thing with prisons. But let's go back to this. The Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was homeless, you sheltered me. When I was in prison, you visited me. Was Jesus talking to the entire world? Or was he talking to those who, as individuals, follow him and apply his teachings to their lives as individuals? If you guessed it was option B, then ding, 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 you're a winner. He was talking, hey, when you do this, when you do that, when you do the other thing. He was not talking to an entire society. He was talking to people as individuals because the relationship between God and man is an individual relationship, not a national relationship. It is not a relationship decreed by someone in a position of rulership. It is an individual relationship. It's between you and God, not your government and God. Isn't it interesting that when it is politically expedient, the separation of church and state seems to miraculously vanish when Democrats believe they can use it to manipulate voters? Just another one of those things that makes you go, And now something else, which is being advocated by this same. And that's mail-in voting. We've been hearing a lot about that lately. The Democrats are pushing for it, and they're pushing hard for it. Because they're saying the coronavirus is so severe that we all must be kept cooped up in our homes, and in order to vote in the election, we all must be able to vote by mail. Absentee ballots, so to speak. Well, there's a big, big problem with that. between 2012 and 2018, between 2012 and 2018, 28.3 million mail-in ballots remain unaccounted for. That's according to data from the Federal Election Assistance Commission. The missing ballots amount to nearly 1 in 5 of all absentee ballots and ballots mailed to voters residing in states that do elections exclusively by mail. Think about that. That is 20% of all of the absentee and mail-in ballots for between 2012 and 2018. 20% of the ballots using a vote-by-mail process. 20% of the vote mysteriously missing. Now do you understand why the Democrats want vote by mail? Is it more clear to you? State and local authorities simply have no idea what happened to these ballots since they were mailed. And the figure of 28 million missing ballots is likely even higher because some areas in the country, like Chicago, didn't respond to the federal agency's survey for questions. Dang, forget that. We don't have time for that. This figure does not include ballots that were spoiled, undeliverable, or came back for any reason. So the figure's actually higher. Although there's no evidence that the millions of missing ballots were used fraudulently, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, which compiled the public data provided from the Elections Assistance Commission, says that the sheer volume of them raises serious doubts about election security. And these questions are relevant. As the COVID-19 pandemic is forcing states across the country to rapidly expand vote-by-mail operations in an election year. Democrat Senators Amy Klobuchar and Ron Wyden have proposed the Natural Disaster and Emergency Ballot Act of 2020, a bill that would allow every eligible voter the opportunity to vote by mail regardless of state laws governing mail-in ballots. Amy Klobuchar and Ron Wyden are ignoring the law and the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, the states' rights. The states manage how the vote is held in their states. And these two progressive tyrants want to overrule the states so they can manipulate an election and defeat Donald Trump. A significant increase in mail-in voting this fall could greatly incentivize ballot harvesting, where third parties collect mail-in ballots on behalf of voters and deliver them to election officials. What they'll say is, to prevent it being lost in the mail, we want to come get it. You will put your vote in the hands of an appointed government representative who will safely transport your vote to the polling place. This is what they will say. There has long been a consensus that such a practice incentivizes fraud, and ballot harvesting is illegal in most of the country for that reason. Public debate over the issue has intensified in recent years after a GOP operative in North Carolina was indicted for crimes related to ballot harvesting in 2018. That same election cycle, California legalized ballot harvesting, and observers say the practice played a key role in ousting several Republican congressmen in Orange County in 2018. Orange County, a long-standing GOP stronghold in a state that has become very liberal in recent decades, a state that didn't have a Republican on the gubernatorial ballot. You had to choose between two Democrats. The fact that millions of unused mail-in ballots are floating around in every election cycle is not a secret type data here. It's sitting there on the internet, and you're paying for that, for the server cost. That's according to Logan Churchwell. He's a spokesman for PILF. So what do people that really focus on the election process do about he asks? They go into ballot harvesting. If there's so many ballots out there in the wind unaccounted for by election officials, surely some manpower could be dedicated to go bring them in. And that's another part of the system where you have weakness and risk. The Democrats want ballot harvesting because they know they can't win this election unless they have a way to manipulate the election. That is why they want mail-in voting. Please, I don't care where you listen to this podcast, wherever you may be, you have to contact your representatives and tell them no, not just no, but, excuse me, I'm going to say it, not just no, but hell no. No way that we go for mail-in ballots, because the Democrats will use it to cheat and to win. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good day. And we'll see you back here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.